Matt had concerns about Matt brought up a concern about priorities of 3 and 4 bedrooms.
Okay.
And I did have a concern, but it was to make sure that 3 and 4 bedrooms were prioritized. So I just thought maybe we could edit it to say okay. Matt wanted to prioritize 3 okay. and 4 bedrooms.
Sure. Can everybody online hear us?
Yes.
Just wanting to check the volume. Thank you.
And then I also noticed that last time I was the one who actually made the motion to approve the minutes, which I don't think is actually cool. So does anyone have a motion on this?
I won't.
Well, actually, I don't know that I was at the last meeting, so I don't think I can.
I have a motion.
If you guys can pull your mics down, though, so that we can, and make sure your green light is on.
No, I'll second that.
Okay, it's there's been a motion and a second. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? I'll slow down so we can get the ones online. Sorry about that. Morning. Okay. So then with that, that brings us to the item number 3, Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund and Affordable Housing RFA.
Okay, so I just want to thank the committee, the board, for providing the guidance at our last meeting that kind of allowed us to work with some subcommittees, Jeff and Susie and Mike Malloy, to really finalize the RFA and be able to get it out. So it was out on Friday, but it officially went through our contracts and procurement announcement process on Monday the 6th. So we're really excited. You got a link to the final version in your packets. And we just wanted to go over a couple of things to just make everybody aware of sort of the next steps and what's happening at this point. I do want to say that the RFA is 83 pages long, but please do not panic. The bulk of probably 45 pages of it are those appendices that are just boilerplate agreements that we need to make any prospective applicants aware of will be a requirement. I did want to talk a little bit about what the next steps are. So today we want to just go through the scoring criteria. We're going to go through that a little bit, just make sure everybody's clear about that process, because as the application review body, you're going to need to be familiar with that. But the way we're going to do that is that I invited Teresa Young from our contracts and procurement office, and she's on the call today virtually with us, to walk you through what you can expect as a reviewer. Because right here you're sitting with your advisory board hats on. When you are looking at those applications, you will be wearing your application review hat. And it's slightly different. We still need you to bring your expertise in full measure to these conversations, but you just need to understand kind of what your role is in that regard. So I wanted Teresa to just do a very high-level overview today so that you can ask us any questions you might have and we can provide clarity. Then she'll probably come back on the 9th of March, which is your next meeting, and we'll really do a deeper dive into this process. Because as you can see on the agenda, the deadline for applications is the 15th of March. And we'd like to propose to all of you several meetings to go through the review process before we get to your final meeting on the 13th to make those recommendations. So are there any questions about that? Karen, come and join us at the table. No, come and join us. We're casual. Folks are getting coffee and juice. If you want some, you should. Yeah. So any questions about that so far? If not, I will turn it over to Teresa. So Teresa, do you want to just take a minute and introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you and I discussed earlier in the week?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Dina. I'm glad to be here today. I'm Teresa Young with County Contracts and Procurement Office. I'm the procurement manager, and I'm really happy to guide you through this selection process and the review of the applications. And so as we get to that point, there are certain aspects that I'll direct us through and guide us through, but of course, still working through the process that we have established with the Housing Trust Fund Board as well. But Dina talked about the couple review committee meetings that we have coming up to review those applications. But I just wanted to review some critical items as we go into this phase, since our application is out. And that is that it's very important that if anyone contacts you, any developers, any construction companies that are interested in submitting in this application. You should not reveal that you're a member of the selection committee. And I'll call it selection committee versus review, but because reviewing is part of that. But also it's important that we direct them to a single point of contact for communication for the application. And that is Josh Narvaez. And Josh, I've never figured out how to pronounce your last name. I'm so sorry. I'm not.
You were very close. It's Narvaez. Very, very close.
Narvaez. Got it. Okay. There we go. Narvaez. It's best to remove you from any conversations that may impact your ability to serve on the committee. And so just forward any questions to Josh and he'll know how to handle those. But the selection committee, you're tasked with fair and equitable review and to bringing unbiased review to that process. We'll talk about conflict of interest a lot more at our next meeting on the 9th and then again at each meeting. Because there is a form that you will complete regarding the applications once we know the applications. And there's definitions for what a restricted conflict is and what unrestricted is. And we may find ourselves with some of our selection committee members that there may be a conflict and we would have to recuse you from reviewing that application or commenting on that application. But we'll get into more detail about what that means and how we're going to monitor that. So the process will be that as those applications come out on March 15th, and we know, well, we'll get an idea when the letters of intent come in on how many we'll have. But we will send your scoring packets out. There'll be a score sheet that we've talked about and that is in the RFA. And the committee members will need to complete a score sheet for each application. We'll divide the applications between the two review meetings. And again, we don't know how many we need for each meeting, but we understand there'll be intense applications and there'll be a commitment involved to reviewing those applications and scoring according to the scoring criteria that's set forth in the RFA. And we'll talk more about that again as we go. What we'll do is this is an independent review. And so you will independently review the applications. You'll have preliminary scores. You'll bring those to the review meetings, and then we as a committee will discuss. And you can rescore at that time. Perhaps you see things in a little bit different light, and you can rescore. We'll go through those two meetings to get through the applications, and then on the funding recommendation meeting, the requirement there is what happens. We'll have all those combined scores. And those will rank all of the applications in order. And where we'll begin at is our top ranked organization that applies. They will need to receive the greatest consideration. And we can talk about what that means when we get there. But then from there, again, we'll talk about how we can make funding recommendations on down the ranking order. So I just really that's it on, 30,000 foot level. But really important, no contact with any potential applicants. Don't receive any gratuities. Even, going to lunch.
Going to lunch. Yeah.
Should not happen. There may be daily business that some of you have with these organizations, and that is fine. It's just you need to try to remove yourself from any situations where conversations can come up where they might ask questions about the application. So, but if you have any questions along the way, just you can email Josh and I can answer that and get responses out to you on how we can do that. I talked about protect your identity. Don't disclose that you are a selection committee member. And really, that's kind of it. Are there any questions for kind of the high level right now?
So I think you just answered my question, but it was our names aren't out there somewhere, right, as being.
This is the hardest point, Stephanie. I just want to make a clarification because you all are listed as advisory board members on the county's boards and commissions list.
Okay.
So it's for you to not disclose who you are is a little bit of a nod and a wink. I mean, I think we try to do that as best we can, but I think, you know, just to sort of maintain some discretion with regard to that, if someone asks you, you, of course, can confirm that that's the case. You're not going to say, well, I can't tell you that it's a secret. It's a little odd. But I just think, and I also just appreciate Teresa saying the daily business, because you were all chosen because of your expertise in housing and the fact that you're already connected probably with a lot of these people that are going to be applying. So we recognize that, you know, you're going to have a conversation about them. If they decide they want to deep dive and go to lunch with you to talk about their application, we would ask that you please refrain from doing that, or it may actually disqualify you from being able to review the application. So,
and also, I think, Teresa, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You made a kind of a little bit of a clarification or a nuance in the difference between being a board member and a selection committee member, and where these things are applying more to the selection committee member piece than just the board.
Correct. And I agree, you're all identified as board members, but we have not disclosed that you'll be the ones reviewing the applications. Of course, they can connect the dots. But it's important that when you have that review hat on, or actually now, you are reviewers, and we are under that process. And so just please be aware of any of those conversations, because we don't want those to happen at this time.
I have a question.
Can you pull the microphone down towards your face? Thank you.
I have a question, and that are we the final word? In other words, if we say yes to someone and that it's a go, is there any group or person above us who can say, no, I don't think so?
Well, the way the ordinance is written, the Housing Trust Fund Advisory Board makes recommendations to myself, the director, and to the mayor. And then we take those to the council. It would be a very unique situation to have anyone say, no, you can't do that, right? We're not gonna approve that. You are the experts. Myself, the mayor, and the council all recognize that you were seated as board members because you have that expertise. So I can't say it would never happen, Karen, but I can say that that's the process, is to go through myself and the mayor and then the council. And we've built that into the review process, the application review process. Does that answer your question?
I just wanted to double check. Plus, I want to take a moment to apologize for being late. There was a school bus that ended up with a flat tire. So a few of us had to wait a few minutes to go around it.
I thought you were going to say that you stopped to help the school bus change.
I know, so was I.
No. There was a time in my life I probably would have, yeah. But not at this age. I've kind of passed that about 30 years ago.
Teresa, I have a question. Would it be inappropriate to recommend a potential applicant to look at this opportunity?
I'm really glad you asked that question. No, you can do that. You can provide them the link, or you can, again, I always recommend you send them to Josh, and Josh can provide them with all that information, because those conversations can, you know, extend from there. But you can, I wouldn't say recommend, but if someone is interested, yeah, you can give them the link to the application. Great question.
Any other questions?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was checking for questions. No, you're good.
Okay. I was just going to say, I'm really excited to work with the board in this capacity. And thank you for the time today. And we'll have many more times to come as we go through this process. So thank you.
Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you, Teresa.
Dina, should I jump off now?
Sorry. Teresa's got other meetings she has to go to. She was kind enough to jump on for us. So thank you, Teresa.
You bet. My pleasure. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So, Matt, I did want to go back and just see if there is any desire on the part of the advisory board. We had not planned on going through the RFA with all of you. I don't know if you wanted to do that. We wanted to talk a little bit about the scoring criteria and make sure we're answering any of your questions, but I would open it to you to make that determination.
Does anyone want to deep dive? we'll move on to the scoring then.
Okay. So actually, if you have the packet available to you, it starts on page 10.
I forgot mine.
Okay. It's okay. You know what? I can actually pull it up on the screen. Why don't I just do that? Hold on a second.
Is this the second one?
No, this is.
Okay, we can share. Karen and I will share.
Are you sure? Well, I'll pull it up anyway.
I've got my reading glasses
Josh.
On.
So Josh sent the packet out to the board.
I got Josh's email.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the packet was in that.
But that's okay. I will share it on my screen. Sorry, I should have been better prepared to do that. We just wanted to make sure we were answering any questions you might have. And also, to be perfectly honest, just get your feedback a little bit in preparation for the pre-application webinar, which will be happening a week from today, and which you are all welcome to attend if you want to just listen.
And you said the RFA went out on Friday last week?
Yeah, it was available on Friday, right?
It was available on Friday. We went live with the
soft,
website.
Like,
yeah, just hit, you know, we had Brock hit live at like 4:30, and Dina kind of took a breath for a second. She's like,
yeah,
okay.
And then
she goes, Josh, make sure you send out those emails and let everyone know on Monday. Yeah. There's no reason to send out an email at 5:30 in the evening on a Friday because no one's probably going to respond. So
yeah.
Monday's Monday, however you want to phrase it for some folks.
Okay. Because there's a couple of things I wanted to just sort of make clear for the advisory board as you're sitting as the selection committee. So starting on page 10, that section 10, application evaluation and scoring criteria, we just wanted to go through this so that you all were, again, just familiarized with it. So when an application comes in, and we are going to be working on a cover sheet, because if you look at the list of items the applicants are expected to submit, these are going to be some pretty substantial applications. So we're going to do our best to provide some decent cover page information, so like a term sheet, a quick term sheet, for lack of a better term, that you can look at quickly and get a sense of things, okay? But so we'll be looking at whether or not the applications are kind of meeting the basic requirements. That's the staff check that you see there at the bottom, whether or not the letter of intent is submitted. And we are requiring a letter of intent prior to an application because we're trying to gauge just how many hours we're going to need from you in these selection committee meetings in order to get the decisions made. So again, we just sort of go through the basics, the quick basics. And then the blue section, again, is a staff check that we'll be working on with our DA's office, looking at the risk of whether or not the funds can be obligated. And we may actually ask you to weigh in on that based on your experience and expertise related to construction projects and phasing them and getting the work done. So that won't just be limited to a staff check necessarily, but we're going to be doing it at the beginning with our DA. And, of course, the risk of the proposed funds being challenged by Treasury. We certainly do not want to find ourselves in a position 2 years down the road of saying, excuse me, can you give us that $1 million back? Like, we do not want to be in that circumstance. We're going to be very careful about making sure the eligibility question, and I'm sure the developers and nonprofit organizations would appreciate that as well. And then in the event a loan is sought, we'll do sort of a risk assessment on whether or not the likelihood of that loan going into default or a repayment being made. As scheduled.
So how are the risks? Is it like 1 to 10? Is it yes or no?
It's really a 1 to 10. Okay. It's a where do we think we're going to be, you know, yeah, based on the underwriting, how we're going to approach underwriting criteria and things like that. So the big one that you all are going to be most involved with, and I appreciate the dialogue at the last meeting about changing sort of the weight that we're doing on these, the weighted scoring. Obviously, the project narrative. Sort of, and what I want to make clear, the reason we wanted to have this conversation is in this scoring criteria, we're providing you with a couple of questions. Please know that this is not the totality of the questions that we hope you are asking yourself. This is simply to spark in your minds, based on your own expertise, what do you think is relevant with regard to the project narrative? If you've served on one of these before and you've seen the kinds of questions being asked about and what you can learn, what you've learned in other scenarios, please bring that to this process. Every time we do this, we hope to get a little bit better at it for the next round of funding. And so please know that when we post questions here, we don't expect you to just stop at those questions. We'd like you to dive a little deeper, okay? So the project narrative, the contribution to our housing goals, jumped to the next page without intending to. The budget and project schedule, I mean, I think this one's going to be probably be a big part of the conversation. And again, I think some at the table are great and understand real estate finance better than others. And I think this is an opportunity for the dialogue to really boost the capacity of the whole advisory board, in addition to helping the staff understand what it is you all are focused on and how we can make sure that in future RFA rounds we're meeting those needs, right, and asking the right questions. The partnerships and local support, this is really important to us. I will just say this at the county. These nonprofit, for-profit housing organizations are working very closely with their local jurisdictions to try to meet their moderate income housing plans and working within that community to not only achieve a financing project, you know, a housing project that is going to be marketable and profitable or whatever they need, but that it's really meeting the needs of the city. So for us, this is a big one. I'll just sort of out myself on that piece for me. And then the access to opportunity. I wanted to take a little extra time here and look at this. I want to open the map that everyone has access to when we do the pre-application webinar. We're going to be talking about that as well. I'm going to take a minute and share it as soon as it comes up. This is something that we at the county, at ORD in particular, is really trying to focus some of our attention on, because in the Office of Regional Development, we have planning and transportation, we have economic development, we have housing, we have the Housing Trust Fund, we have environmental sustainability. So we have been looking for a framework that looks at a parcel or an area that has proximity to food, meaning a grocery store that accepts SNAP, daycare that are licensed daycare centers, transit stops within core transit locations, K-12 education, and kind of beginning to see where, if we were to put mixed income or affordable housing, low to moderate income housing, are there support services within a quarter mile of that location that could actually be a greater support for the success of that project? So we're looking at this in all of our organizations, our economic development and everything. So this is, when we say this access to opportunity map, this is what we're talking about, that we don't expect someone to say, well, gosh, I've got this parcel that I own here and I could swap it with that. That's not what we're looking for. We're not looking for, you know, people to sort of chase parcels in this area. We just want to give everyone a better sense of, is this parcel where you're proposing a housing development, is it within a close proximity of those beneficial services or not? And I will tell you, the hardest one that we've been able to accommodate is employment centers. I mean, I think everybody knows that employment west of I-15 is sorely lacking. So it's a little bit difficult, because the way we do this, it actually gives a benefit to those areas that already have an employment center, when we would love to see those employment centers developing on the west side of I-15. So we chose to do a ranking that really looks at dispersing these potential projects and our investments, the county's and ORD's investments, in these areas that are the darkest blue. I will also tell you, you can turn on a layer on this of the municipal jurisdictions, but in ORD, I have sort of put out an edict to everybody on my staff, please do not focus on municipal jurisdictions. Because when we do that, we start getting into the, well, what have you done for me lately? Like, what, you're doing that for that city, what are you doing? Instead, we have a responsibility to look at the regional health of Salt Lake County, and so we're focused more on that. But we're not crazy enough to think that someone's not going to want to know what local jurisdiction they're in. So just be aware that that's kind of our approach. And I'd be happy to answer any questions or any comments or recommendations that you all make, because this is a work in progress for us. We're trying to learn from this tool and figure out how we can use it to its best advantage.
So just one question. There's two different layers on there. There's the blue and then the purple, which is a total score of 21 plus.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
So the total score of 21 plus is the area that we are going to want to focus when we look at these applications. And we will tell you whether or not it's in that location. So one of the scoring criteria includes, one of the questions that we have under the access to opportunity is, does it meet that 21 plus score? And that'll just be a simple, yep, it does. That means it's in an area that the county really wants to focus. If it's not, then to be perfectly honest, we can say, if I were on the review committee, I might say to myself, okay, it's outside that area. Why is it outside that area? Is it farther from a transit stop than those other areas? Is it really not near an employment center? Is there a lack of, is there sort of a food desert in that area, or is there a lack of daycare? And how relevant are those services to the success of this housing project? If you as a review body feel like that's really important, it may be something that you raise then as a question in the section of the application that talks about what are you doing with regard to services for the residents of that housing project. Does that make sense?
And I would say that I think the way that you have the map set up lets, you know, us kind of go and check those individual layers. So it's like if the priority is daycare or food, turn those on individually and see, you know, is the project, like, are those two top items met even if the score as a total isn't 21 and over? So I like the way that the map is set up to allow sort of that interaction with it.
Good. That's awesome. What we're hoping for. Yeah.
I have a second question, which is, are we also mapping where known affordable housing projects are located so that we're getting more of that diversity and spread of housing projects versus clustering housing projects?
We haven't on this. We haven't. But it's definitely something, if that's something you would like us to anticipate as part of your review conversation, we can absolutely anticipate that and make sure we click those. We do have one situation where projects that we have a database that we receive from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, which we cannot publicly, we can't make it public. We have a data sharing agreement with them, but we could do a heat map potentially so that we're not exactly pinpointing a location, but we're, you know, I'm looking at Claudia because she could probably tell you where all of them are anyway. But we need to respect that data sharing agreement so we can figure out the best way to sort of support you in having that information.
I also want to just note that we want to be careful about not having the tail wag the dog here because although these funds are very important and will be, you know, the critical piece that makes it a project happen, I think the real creator of the project and driver of the project will be the tax credits, right? So I think that where those projects go is really driven by the QAP, our allocation plan. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about that in a second when we get to other business. But I it's important that these things align. So if we start saying, for the little bit of money relative to the size mm-hmm. of the project, for the little bit of money, I don't want to get too restrictive, like, well, you know, you can't go here, you can't go there. That gets really hard. So
that's a great point.
That's a really good point. Thank you.
I was going to.
I do wish to say I do appreciate this, though, as being part of the conversation. It seems like as we've been talking about the housing crisis and affordable housing, access to opportunities or services just is so often not part of that conversation. So I do appreciate the county's leadership in including this element.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was going to say, I live close to what used to be the Cottonwood Mall, and I see all this building going there, and I go, this would have been an ideal place to put one of these projects, because within a quarter mile of that are two Macy's, one Harmon's, a Sprouts, five schools that are well within, I could walk it. And if I could walk it at 76, I think kids could walk it, you know, and I'm going, and yet it wouldn't be accepted there. And that I find troubling, my own opinion.
Okay. So, I mean, you've walked through the scoring.
Right. I'm going to go back to I'll go back and put the scoring criteria back up so everybody can look at it. And then because we have the bonus scoring, okay, so we have these bonus scores, which may actually speak to the QAP and the emphasis or may not, and we can address that at the time. But does the project primarily serve one or more of the following priority populations? We had talked about that last time. Whether or not the project is shovel-ready, and we've defined what shovel-ready means for the applicants. A mix of affordable housing types. We heard from you at the last meeting that was really important, that this body, the review body, may actually, is going to look favorably. We're stating it here as a bonus point of don't, you know, if you just come in with all the studios being affordable and there, we know that there's a need for two bedrooms. We're really seeking projects that are going to address that issue. And then if more of the units are dedicated to affordable. Now, I wanted to bring a clarification to this one specifically because I fully expect the majority of the project applications we're going to get are 100% affordable. They're going to be permanent supportive housing projects. They're going to be low-income housing tax credit projects and so forth. So we knew, the staff knew at the front end that there are some projects that are just going to get those 2 points simply because of the nature of the project. And we didn't think that was going to be too much of an issue because if we can get more affordable housing, let's do it, right? Okay. So that's where we are with regard to the scoring criteria. Any other questions about that? Because we need to jump in, Matt, to the harder conversation is how many meetings and how much of your time can we take?
Yeah. For sure. So let's move into that. And you can sort of talk about it. I can already say that the proposed meeting on the 30th is going to have a conflict for me.
Okay.
But that's why we have a vice chair and I can, you know, send my scores in and there's that kind of stuff. But okay.
So,
how do you want to go about?
Well, this is the tough part because we wanted to propose putting these meetings on your calendar and then canceling them if we need to. I would much rather do that than try to chase down all of your schedules. So, because we have no idea how many letters of intent we're going to receive. The letter of intents have to be submitted by the 23rd of February. So we'll know then, right, kind of how many meetings we think we can get through. So if you would all be amenable to this, we would request that we meet on the 9th to do that pre-selection committee work, a little bit deeper dive on that, and then answer any questions you have about sort of the nature of the applications that we've received. And then we would really love to be able to have a March 30th meeting. And if that doesn't work for the majority of folks, we will move the date. We will, you know, we're willing to accommodate your schedules, of course, because we need you at the table more than you need all of us staff. So, but we do think a 2-hour meeting is probably what we're going to need, several 2-hour meetings. And I do want to point out that in the RFA, we have indicated to any potential applicants that the Thursday, April 13th, which is your regularly scheduled meeting, would be the final selection committee, and you would make your recommendations at that point that we would then take to the county council. What I can say is we can change that. If we need to push it one more week, we can push it one more week if we absolutely have to. Because I am a little worried about how many applications we're going to get and how much time it's going to take to get through them.
30th actually is a conflict for me as well.
Okay.
I could do it later, just not 8:30.
That, for me, that whole day is a bust.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I could do it at like late in the day, but.
Well, are there others? Can we just sort of do a, I don't know how you want to do it, Matt.
How about let's just do, does anyone have, who else has a conflict with March 30?
Is the 29th easier?
29th or 31st.
Is a Wednesday. 31st is a Friday.
Both of those would be fine for me.
Do those days work for?
I'm not employed, so the only thing I have to deal with is a parrot being angry.
Oh, that's right.
And I go out and that's I right. have a fix.
But we have muffins for him.
Well, just bring the carrots.
That's right.
Oh, well, he would voice his opinion.
29 would work for me.
Would the 29th work?
I can move some things around to make the 29th.
Yes. And is that morning time still best, 8:30 to 10:30?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's, if we can do that on the 29th instead of the 30th.
And you'll send out the calendar.
Yeah, we're going to send all, as soon as we get these on, we're going to send them out to you later today, as soon as this meeting's over. So the 29th, and then we were looking at the 6th, right, of April would be the next one. Does that work for everybody to do at 8:30 to 10:30?
So sorry, what day was that?
The 6th, it's Thursday, the 6th of April?
No, that whole week is, I'm off.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Did you clear that with us?
Claudia.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Is there anybody else that has a conflict on the 6th? Mm-hmm. Okay. How about the next week? Does the 13th is your regularly scheduled meeting. I would hate to sort of have two meetings in 1 week, but I wouldn't really recommend that. But I'm wondering if we kept the 13th and pushed another meeting to the 20th that following Thursday instead. Does that work?
Yes. I'm trying to see when the Utah NARO conference is. If I remember. It's in April at some point here. Let me just see if they have it on their website.
I haven't.
Yes, you should. When is it, Mike?
It is April 25th through the 27th.
Okay, good.
Okay, so if we did.
I'll be out on the 20th.
Oh. You will? What about the 19th?
I think.
8:30 to 10:30 on the 19th of April.
No. That's the league conference.
Oh, they're right. Okay.
Well, you know, I could do it. I could be on. I could jump on.
Could you on the 19th?
Yeah, I could jump on online.
On the 19th. So does the 19th work for everybody? 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning on the 19th. That will be your final meeting.
Yep.
So we would do the 29th. The 13th, right? And the 6th. Did we say the 6th? I didn't write the 6th down.
I've got the 9th.
I don't think we said the 6th.
No, we didn't.
I got March 9th.
Yeah, because you're out on the 6th, right, Claudia?
April 6th.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm out.
Okay, we might have to have that without you.
I'm going to be away. I'm going to be in the desert somewhere way away from. Yeah, I won't be able to zoom in. Sorry.
Well, but here's the point. Here's the question for you. And I wouldn't ask you to do that on your vacation anyway. Would be to see if you are able to rank those applications and send your numbers in so that we know that you've reviewed them, and then you can send that to Teresa and she can add it to your list.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Then can we keep the 6th as a meeting? Okay. And the 13th? And then how about we resort to the 19th only if needed?
Mm-hmm.
Does that seem reasonable to everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you send calendar invites, the sooner you send calendar invites, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the 20th is a no-go, right, for our chair? Okay. Yeah. So the 19th of April will be only if we don't get through all of the applications and the recommendations on the 13th.
And we did decide on April 6th we're doing one.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That was going to be the hardest part of today's agenda. Whew. Yeah. Whew. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, and then we will adjust probably the next council meeting. We won't be able to get it into the agenda for the 25th, so we'll probably be looking at the 1st of or the 2nd of May when the final applications will be, the final dollars will be approved. Okay? Great.
All right, well, that scheduling was the last thing on that item, so we're going to move on to other business, and you want to talk about legislative.
Yeah, we have a couple of things under other business we'd like to talk about. One is, I believe you all received an email regarding a disclosure agreement requirement. Disclosure forms are required for all boards and commission members. So I know some went ahead and sent them electronically. I sent it out electronically. If you didn't get that email or it got lost in your inbox, please let me know and I'll resend it. But I think Josh has hard copies of all of the disclosure forms. So if you can fill it out today, if you haven't already filled it out, then we can get it submitted. Those have to go. Any conflict of interest that is disclosed has to go. Every agency in the entire county has to submit them within 30 days of receiving them to the county council. So there's hundreds of them that come in. And if you don't have a disclosure, you just say, if you don't have a conflict of interest, you just simply say, I don't have a conflict of interest. And we just keep that on file. Okay. So we'll have hard copies here, but if you need me to send you the email, let me know. I don't know. I'll find it. Yeah.
I think you might want to just doing that. But
yeah. If you don't remember, it wouldn't kill you. It wouldn't hurt to just fill one out today and we'll get it taken care of. Okay.
It said an email that I send it directly to the HR department.
So yeah.
If we send it into them.
Yep. You're done. Yeah, okay. So if you do remember sending it into HR-ORD, then you're good. Okay. Perfect. Two other items we wanted to talk about. Claudia, I think you wanted QAP and then legislative update, Matt? Anything else?
I thought you were saying that you were talking about the tax credit stuff from the legislature.
Well, I think, if anybody who's involved in housing issues at the legislature, if you want to take a minute and just sort of update everybody on what you know and what's happening and if there's action that can be taken.
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. Utah Housing Corporation, we have been working for many months on a piece of legislation that is being run as part of the big affordable housing package under HB 364. And that's being sponsored by Representative White. And it includes changes to the state low-income housing tax credit. And those changes would essentially 10x the size of our state tax credit program, which is huge. It sounds big, but let me preface that by saying we have the second smallest tax credit program in the nation currently. So 10x is going to make us big, and it's about where we need to be to really move the needle on producing additional affordable housing units in any manner that will even be noticeable. The problem of affordable housing production is cost, and we think this is a great way to dedicate some resources. So that's HB 364, and we're getting good support on that, very good support. We've been working with some of the syndicators. Our intent here is to attract a larger investment pool that will consume all of the credit, and so we've been working with some of the national syndicators on this, and we think we've got some good momentum here. It's been heard in committee. We've had excellent support around it. We have some of the national syndicators are engaging lobbyists to help us with this effort. So we think that this has a good chance. We're pretty optimistic about this. The other piece of legislation that we've been involved with is HB 231, which is Representative Ellison's bill on essentially exempting permanent supportive housing projects from paying property tax. Currently, the low-income housing tax credit projects are all able to apply for an annual abatement of their property taxes based on the reduced rent revenues. And under the state constitution, it's very hard to get an automatic exemption for any property from paying property taxes. But it's clear that it can be done by legislation for very discrete charitable purposes. And so we think that this has also a very good chance. It's limited right now to – the legislation as it reads is limited to permanent supportive housing projects where 100% of the units are deed restricted at 30% of area median income. And that's really a very few number of projects so far. So we've had a number of developers say, hey, why not all of the LIHTC projects? Well, right now we think this is the step that makes the most sense to get our – to stabilize the permanent supportive housing projects with the certainty that they will not have to pay property taxes. That will help those projects tremendously. So we're going to start there and see where that goes. So those are the legislative things that I know.
Well, I mean, we all know there's a myriad of different bills that are up there and doing anything from how wide a street needs to be that can affect the housing to changes to the housing plan stuff. So I know there's a lot going on up there.
But Matt, from a municipal point of view, do you have anything that the committee or the advisory board should be mindful of or look into more with regard to that?
No, I don't think there's. There's definitely, I think, a difficulty in this. Clearly, I am on here and I'm supportive of whatever it takes to sort of continue to build housing to meet the need. And then on the other hand, I've got the other hat, which is there's a lot of stuff that's trying to, I would argue, remove some of the local control that cities have, and that balance is hard. So I don't know that I would say. I have a wide variety of opinions, but I'm not sure this is maybe okay. Where I should.
You don't want to mobilize this crowd to go on. Probably a wise decision. But I think it's important to understand, because this tug of war between state mandates and local control has been going on for several years. And I, you know, we all kind of watch it to see what's going on. I mean, it's really relevant to the county as well, as we obviously the health of the cities means that the county is healthy. So we have to be very mindful about what happens to the cities in our jurisdiction. So, but I appreciate your diplomatic remarks.
Anyone else? Oh.
Not on legislation, but I would like to just make a few comments about the qualified allocation plan, since I think that that's really going to be a good, you know, a good partner to align with here as we do our work.
Claudia, can I just ask for the benefit of everybody on the call who may not be as enmeshed in this as you are, can you just give take a step back and give sort of some context of what that is?
See, this is why I don't get invited to cocktail parties. the Qualified Allocation Plan, the QAP, is the state's allocation plan to administer the low-income housing tax credit program. And the low-income housing tax credit program is responsible for the vast majority, 95% of all affordable housing production across the country. Here in Utah, that's the same. So it is the single most important piece of the financing element of any affordable housing development. There are two kinds of credit that we – actually three that we administer. There's the 4% credit, the 9% credit, which is extremely competitive, and the state credit, which we hope to expand here. So all of those programs are the rules and the regulations and the application processes are all defined in that allocation plan, which we revise and review annually. We try very hard to make the allocation strategy align with the needs of the state. That's why we review it annually, because we really want to you know, our state is growing and changing, and there's a lot happening, and so we try very hard to adjust to those changes. If the county wanted to put together some comments on the allocation plan and maybe some suggestions on how we can align our programs a little bit better, and what you're seeing and what you might like to see. We would entertain that, and now is the time, because we have our first public input meeting coming up on February 28th, I do believe, and so we're starting to take comment now. Developers will make application for the 9% credit to us in mid June. So I fully expect that we will get tax credit applications for these projects that the board will get here. So this would be a good time to think about how we align our efforts. Just sort of as a preview, one thing that UHC is really thinking about is more PSH. Since, you know, it seems like the legislature is also strongly contemplating resources to really support PSH in a big way. We think this might be the time to maybe dedicate more of our resources for PSH. So, you know, that's just one thing. It's a 30% set aside. We're looking at expanding that, you know, to align with all of the resources that are coming down the pike, we hope. And so, you know, we're very much we're interested in hearing feedback along those lines. So.
Is that something that if the county were to provide feedback on that, is that coming from your already sort of put together plans? Is that something that falls within the providing recommendations from this group to you guys, and then you contemplate? I mean, do we have a role in that, or is that
of course.
A different group if you guys are going
to
participate?
No, of course you do. In fact, I mean, this body, you're supposed to be looking at applications that come through our housing trust fund, but we would rely on the expertise of the folks on this board to also say, here's what we know about what the needs are, and here's a recommendation that we would make. Now, we did not post this agenda that included a moment of decision-making or taking a vote on something, so I don't think we can do that. But we could certainly hear the staff can take the consensus of this board and move forward and potentially even bring something that's more formal to you at your March meeting Claudia, if you could help us understand what is the full time frame for input and comment for the QAP?
So we'll have our first input meeting, as I said, at the end of February. Well, in probably end of March, we'll have our formal public hearing. We want to have the QAP approved by our Board of Trustees in early April. So it would be really great to get any of that feedback at any point in that process. And you can do that just by emailing me. That it's really just that simple. So
so one of the things that might be helpful, Matt, in bringing to this body is that through our work with HOME, through Mike's team, other teams that work through HOME and CDBG and everything else, we have to do action plans and allocation plans for how we're going to spend that, how we want to spend that federal money. And Mike's just gone through a very robust process for HOME, which is the Home Investment Program. And that data may be very interesting and could inform some of those discussions. And I would just ask Mike if it might be appropriate when that's finalized that maybe that's a resource we could send to the Housing Trust Fund Advisory Board as a precursor to a larger conversation that we could have at your March meeting, if that's amenable to you.
That sounds good to me. Does anyone have any other thoughts on that? Let's proceed with that.
Okay. That'd be great. And then, Claudia, if you have other resources that our staff needs to be thinking about to help present information to this board to have that more robust conversation, we'd welcome any feedback you have for us.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Anything else in other business? Once, twice. All right. With that, we're to the end of the meeting. Does anyone want to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Moved.
Second.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much. And we are really excited about the RFA being out. I just have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So see, that's why I don't go to cocktail parties.
Right.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tina.
Okay, look.
You just want to, yeah, I'll take a hard copy.
I got hard copies, that's why I apologize.